Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk, 201-939-4513. That's the phone number for you to get in touch with us and talk some Giants football. We'll have Josh Lewin. You might know him as the play-by-play announcer on the radio for the Mets along with Howie Rose, but I bet you didn't know he also does play-by-play for UCLA football. So he'll be joining us in just a few minutes to discuss the UCLA prospects heading out in the NFL draft, Josh Rosen specifically. But Lance, it's funny. There was a lot of hubbub over what Jim Mora Jr. said about Josh Rosen to Peter King. He actually had said the same thing last week on the Path to the Draft show on NFL Network. And then he was on yesterday. I'm not sure if you tuned in.
Oh, he was on all day yesterday.
Well, I DVR the Path to the Draft show on NFL Network every day. And I think it's a great show. I think you'll learn a lot. And he made it very clear that he believes Josh Rosen's the best quarterback in the draft. He was very effusive in his praise for Rosen. And he made the point that what he said to Peter King, while it was taken by some as a negative, most, in his opinion, it's not considered a negative. And shockingly, I have not seen as much coverage of what he said yesterday as opposed to what I saw from what he said over the weekend. It's funny how that works.
There's not enough controversy surrounding the follow-up. Is that what you're alluding
to? No, my point is that I think people should point out when they make such a big deal about what he says initially to actually cover a little bit more how he clarified what he originally said.
Of course. No, I agree with you. Plus, also, I don't think statements should be taken out of context.
Correct.
I think you should look at how he said it as opposed to just some random phrase that intellectually he will get bored if he's not challenged. And that was taken out of context, but nobody listened to what he said to build that up. And you're right. Not only did he say he was the best quarterback, John, he said he was the best player in the draft, in his opinion.
That's right.
That's what he said. So, and he also said that Pat Shurmur and him could very well be a good fit because of what Shurmur provides offensively. That was one of the other things that he mentioned in passing yesterday when he clarified and went into greater detail.
And it is fitting. We did not book the guest because of this, but considering it has been a story, it's going to be great to be joined by Josh Lewin, who does play-by-play for UCLA football. And, of course, you might know him from 710 WOR. He does the not 710. On WOR, he does the Mets games with Howie Rose. Josh, you got John Schmelk and Lance Meadow here at Giants.com. How are you today?
Great to be with you, fellas. And, yeah, good timing. I would agree with that.
Absolutely. And, of course, everyone talked about the Jim Mora stuff over the weekend. And to me, it was a guy that's an announcer now, and he was trying to be honest, and I think it got himself into some hot water. You've been around the UCLA program a couple years. What's your experience been with Josh Rosen, interacting with him, what you've heard about him? Because all the questions about Josh Rosen seem to have nothing to do with what you actually see him do between the lines on the field, and it's kind of everything else that people worry about.
Yeah, I think the important thing with Josh is just to kind of be open and honest about who he is and where he's from. I mean, you know, I don't think he hides from it. He's an entitled kid. You know, I mean, he grew up in an $8 million house with a view of the beach. I mean, his dad was very close to being Surgeon General. You know, two brilliant parents, and, you know, got into UCLA not just because of his athletic gifts, but because he's a smart guy. And I don't think that he should have to apologize for any of that. I don't think he runs from that. You know, I mean, this is just facts that he, you know, was given a lot of breaks as a kid. He went to all the elite quarterback camps, and, you know, don't forget he was a top-ranked tennis player in the state of California for many years when he was, you know, before he really got into football. And, you know, you don't think he got the very best tennis instruction possible because his parents could afford it? Absolutely he did. So I think that's kind of the backdrop that you have to set, that, you know, this is a guy who comes from great things and wants to be a part of great things and do great things. And that's not to say, well, everybody else in the world is therefore a knucklehead. You know, it's just that this is who he really truly is. He's also blessed with an incredible arm, the incredible ability to see the field. If he had had any kind of offensive line or consistent wide receivers at UCLA, this would be game, set, match, to put it in the tennis terms. I mean, he really didn't have either of those things and was still really brilliant the 2 years that I saw him. So I think what it comes down to, I mean, and we can get into the Jim Mora stuff too if you want. For me, it's really simple. If you're going back and forth with Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, Darnold is Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, kind of an everyman, big, blocky guy. You know, and I think that is a great fit for Cleveland. It's not a perfect comparison, but if you had to compare Rosen to a current NFL quarterback, I would say Aaron Rodgers. And that's a guy that went to Cal, which is also a really good school, and, you know, has the ability to see the field really well. He's a bit of a gunslinger, for better or for worse, and gets himself into trouble sometimes with both his arm and his mouth. So a lot of people like Roethlisberger, a lot of people like Rodgers. There's no right answer for which one is better. But I think that is what this little conundrum comes down to, is if you're on the clock and you want to pick one of those two guys, what's the better fit for your personnel and for your fan base? And my guess is that's all Jim Mora meant, was that, you know, kind of a blue-collar guy fits very well in Cleveland. And you guys are right. If Josh has a chance to be teamed with Pat Shurmur, there's going to be pyrotechnic brilliance that comes out of that. So, I don't think Jim's wrong. But, yeah, it is. It's an odd thing to throw out there, especially when it's parsed the way it is, just kind of cut and paste without context, that, here's his own coach at UCLA saying, I would take the USC guy first.
Josh, you brought up his upbringing, you brought up his background, and when it comes to playing quarterback in the National Football League, whether or not you could command the huddle, whether or not you can earn the respect of your teammates is a big part of playing that position. From what you've seen, because, you know, you mentioned he came from a wealthy background, and maybe he can't relate to a lot of his teammates who don't have the luxuries that he had. You know, what was the interaction like between he and his teammates where you felt they'd be perhaps willing to run through a wall for their quarterback?
Yeah, no, they all were. I mean, they really were. And a lot of those guys that he was with certainly did not come from privilege. You know, the guy he had the best rapport with just in terms of production on the field was a kid named Jordan Lasley.
Compton.
I mean, he went viral because he's, you know, dancing during the combine. And, you know, a guy that dropped a lot of passes, has incredible skills, but also got himself in a lot of trouble off the field. I mean, he was suspended for 4 of the 12 games that UCLA played this year. And, not a great decision maker in any way, shape, or form, but those two were great friends. So, yeah, I don't think that, you know, just because Josh is from that background, it doesn't mean he can't get along with people. He does get along with people, I think, very well.
We're joined by Josh Lewin, play-by-play UCLA football. Also, you can hear him do the Mets games with Howie Rose on 710 WOR. Josh, watching, I think I watched about 7 or 8 games from Josh during the year on tape, and the one thing that kind of made me nitpick him a little bit, because like you said, he's a great prospect, was I thought sometimes when he got some pressure, he wasn't able to do the type of Aaron Rodgers thing, to use the same comparison you did, where he can kind of make something out of nothing, and that when pressure broke down, he would sometimes kind of bail on his back foot a little bit, and at times throw the ball up for grabs. Do you think, if you had to nitpick something that maybe he could get better at, is making something out of nothing when the play breaks down, maybe in that category?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think that is one thing that, he does that, tries to play hero ball sometimes, and indeed just, try to be, and he, actually that the game that they won week 1 against Texas A&M, which supposedly was going to be the precursor to a great season. They were down by, what was it, 34 points, and they came back to win. And, one of his throws was exactly as you described, just happened to go right through the hands of an A&M defensive back to a disbelieving UCLA wide receiver in the end zone. I mean, the game was over if that kid from A&M picked that pass, which he really should have. So, that bought him some time. The magic man, he's able to come back from down 34 against a good Texas A&M team. But he got away with some things in that game, and he'd be the first to admit it. You watch and see how that game ended. He marched the team down the field brilliantly. I mean, it was like a Tom Brady surgical strike, downfield until he found exactly the right guy with a fade in the end zone to basically end the game, right, with seconds to go. He gives you both of those things. He does. I mean, sometimes he'll break your heart. All those years doing the Chargers in San Diego, another halfway decent comparison there is Philip Rivers, because Philip doesn't have the greatest mechanics. I mean, he'd be the first to admit that.
No, he does not.
And Philip, and a lot of times when his best receiver was like, I don't know, I mean, I'm trying to think of who was even running around for him out there. Dontrell Inman a few weeks was like his best receiver.
Yeah.
And so he'd throw into triple coverage trying to make something happen because he just didn't feel like he had any other options. He didn't want to be check down boy and just, you know, kind of, you know, surrender. And you wonder why Phillip Rivers led the league in interceptions 2 or 3 years. That's exactly why. It's not because he makes, you know, terrible throws. He just made a couple bonehead decisions trying to be a hero. And, yes, I, you know, that's exactly what Rosen has to guard against. I would agree with that full throttle.
Quick follow-up. You mentioned that you did the Chargers game for a long time, Josh. So you know what it is to see a good NFL quarterback. You watched Phillip Rivers for a long time. Do you think Josh can step in right away, maybe more so than any other quarterback in this class, and step in and be a serviceable or average or good NFL starter in year number one, given the pro style he played with at UCLA?
Yeah, I do. And I mean, I go back, I didn't see it firsthand, but you know, everybody at UCLA talks about Troy Aikman going first overall, and then he gets thrown right to the Wolves with Dallas, and the Cowboys went, what, 1-15 that year, and he absolutely took his lumps. But you could tell that with a decent supporting cast, he was going to be fine, and they just kind of let him get his feet dirty, you know, and then get drilled that first year. I'm not saying the guy's going to grow up to be Troy Aikman, but yeah, if you put him in a scenario, even if it is Cleveland, you know, where he's got to suffer a little bit first, I don't think that would get him down too much if he knows that better things are coming. And you know, from a Giants perspective, you know, if he's able to learn from Eli, if he's able to learn from Shurmur, you know, be in New York, which is just so, you know, to coin the Jim Mora phrase, stimulating in so many ways. I really think it's a great fit. And my guess is Josh would really love if all of the planets aligned and he became a Giant. I think that he would admit privately, my guess anyway, is that that's a great spot for him. But I think wherever he goes, I think he's going to end up being very, very popular and very, very good.
You know, Josh, when you brought up Dontrell Inman, I thought you were going to go with Seiya Jiratutu as one of the obscure Chargers receivers. I'm a little disappointed.
But funny you say that. I actually was like struggling to remember that name. That's why I defaulted to Inman. But, yeah, there were games. I mean, Rivers actually won a game in Houston.
I remember, yeah.
Two touchdown passes to Seiya Jiratutu. I mean, and Randy McMichael instead of Antonio Gates, the tight end in that same game. So that's the kind of brilliance he's all about.
Absolutely. If those are not household fantasy names, I don't know what are at this point. You brought up Phillip Rivers, and what's interesting about Phillip Rivers, Josh, is his durability. Now, with Josh Rosen, there's questions about his durability, shoulder surgery, and then multiple concussions. How concerning do you think that is on the next level, given the history that he has already built up at the collegiate level?
Yeah, I think it's overblown. I mean, the surgery was legit. I mean, Caron Crump of Arizona State just body slammed him, and that's a kid that's going to play in the NFL and play very well. And, you know, he wrecked his shoulder, and that happens. But he came back and had a, you know, fantastic year throwing the ball this year, no problems there. The concussion thing, I don't know for sure what exactly was diagnosed the two times they pulled him. I mean, both times he was lucid and wanted to keep playing, and it was kind of like, nah, you know what, just sit it out. Just let us err on the side of caution. The first time was against Vita Vea and Washington.
Big
and
boy.
To me, that decision was simply, you know what, with no O-line, this guy's going to get killed today, and that's not fair. You know, we're going to lose this game one way or another, so let's at least keep Rosen upright and let him keep playing, you know, his presumed final year of college. The other game where he got knocked out, and for some reason I'm blanking on who it was against, but it was very, very late in the year.
Yeah.
He really wanted to keep playing, and again, it was kind of like, nah, you know what, we got this, you know, it's not worth it. And he was kind of pissed off on the sideline. I mean, I think he kind of knew he doesn't want to get this reputation going into the draft of some porcelain guy. I don't think he is. His teammates all say he's real tough, and I believe that.
The other off-the-field thing, and this is the last one for me on Rosen, Josh, for you, is some people believe that he has some, quote-unquote, too many outside interests, and I think the way I'll phrase the question is that maybe he tends to have an opinion on a lot of stuff that's not football-related, and as you well know, being around New York, when you have an opinion on stuff that's not directly related to the sport you're playing, that has the tendency to get you put on back pages or front pages, and big deals get made out of that sort of thing. Do you think that could be an issue with him at the pro level, where maybe he might find the need to comment on things that are outside the realm of football that could get him into trouble in a larger media market.
Yeah, I do, but I don't think that he'd be the first guy to do that. I mean, he's very quotable because he's very smart. And if you go back and look, you know, the one time he was asked, I guess just before the Cactus Bowl, in which he did not play last year, that they asked him his opinion on student athletes getting paid and all that. And if you Google that or YouTube it, it's a 90-second. It was like Bob Costas talking.
Yeah,
he never
it
said
was.
He pontificated on something he believed in, and I thought he came off great. So he's not a potted plant, so to speak, right? I mean, he's not just going to sit there and say nothing. That's just not who he is. But the good news is I think that that's something that if you look around the NFL, there's a lot of people running their mouths right now. Josh Rosen would not be the first and only to do that. And, you know, just looking at some of the things that get said these days, I think a lot of people, especially in New York, would actually nod their heads up and down when he says whatever he's going to say, as opposed to can you believe this guy has that opinion.
Talking with Josh Lewin, radio play-by-play announcer for UCLA football, going over the UCLA prospects. Well, you brought up earlier, Josh, when you evaluate a quarterback, it's important to take into consideration the personnel around that quarterback. And you had mentioned offensive line issues, which obviously a number of NFL teams can relate to. They're always looking to improve that department. They have two UCLA offensive linemen very much in the mix here for this year's draft. I want to start with Colton Miller, who moved from right tackle to left tackle. Big guy, 6'9". How much of a challenge does his size present for him to adapt to the NFL?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think people love that he's that big and yet that athletic, but I'm not sure how that translates to the NFL. You know, you don't see a lot of 6'9 people in the NFL, period. So, again, smart as a whip kid, comes from a great football family. You know, he was definitely the best part of that offensive line. Problem was, the rest of it was really pretty weak.
And, you know, watching Miller over the course of the year, he tested out of the building at the combine. He was wonderful, and that's kind of moved him up draft boards, I think, Josh. How consistent was he at that left tackle spot, though, when they asked him to isolate against some of the better speed rushers you'll see in the Pac-12?
Yeah, no, you know what? I'd love to pump him up and say, oh, he was brilliant, but he was a little in and out. And my guess is some of that was quite possibly injury-related. You know, they always asked him, obviously, to take on the best guy.
Right.
And I don't think he was 100% or even close to that a lot of the time. So I don't know. It's not a motor issue, that much I can guarantee. I just don't think he was completely healthy the last couple of years. And my guess is that made a difference. But, even at 60%, he was better than whatever else they were going to put out there.
The other notable offensive lineman is Scott Quesenberry, who's the younger brother of David, who was with the Houston Texans. I mean, in terms of his upside at the next level at the center position, what did you see out of Scott?
He's a really neat kid. I mean, I hope he makes it because he wants to, but if he doesn't, there's a million things in football other than playing center that he could do. There were times where, you know, he would have trouble with a really, really good opponent. And that scares me a little bit at the NFL level. But he's so eager to learn and so eager to work. And, you know, with the Chargers, we had a kid from Michigan named David Mulk, who was, I think, a third-round pick as a center. And he never really popped. He never really went on to do anything. But my feeling is if David Mulk can be a third-round pick, then so can Scott Quesenberry, because I just think Scott Quesenberry is so eager to get better at every turn.
We're joined by Josh Lewin, play-by-play UCLA. Of course, you can hear him tonight when the Mets take on the Phillies on 710 WOR. Got opening day ruined yesterday by the snow. Try to recover today with both local baseball teams. You mentioned Jordan Lasley, Josh. He's a guy that you mentioned the off-the-field trouble, also had some holding on to the football trouble, had some drop issues. But he has as much athletic talent, I think, as any wide receiver in college football, right?
Yeah. Now, he's got a Mets connection. He's high school teammates with Dominic Smith, the Mets first base prospect. It's funny. A lot of the guys, most of the guys from that high school, they all go to USC. Mm-hmm. He was the one guy that broke ranks and went to UCLA. And to me, that's kind of telling, too, that this guy does what he wants to, you know. And that can obviously be a bit of a red flag, too, you know, in football you're supposed to kind of toe the line. But Yeah, very athletic, and when he got in a rhythm, shoot, there were three games in a row where he was averaging something like 210 yards a game. I've never seen anything like that before. But there were other games where he had really costly drops. There was a game the year before up in Pullman, Washington, at Washington State, where he tried to be a hero and coughed the ball up on a fumble in the last 30 seconds to cost him a chance at a win. And so, yeah, very inconsistent, but absolutely athletic enough. I think he should be a mid-round pick, and somebody should be very happy with the chance to get him right.
Josh, I'm reading 21 drop passes over the last two seasons, so a drop rate of 16%, which obviously stands out to you, and I'm sure everybody else who's watched UCLA football. From talking to the coaching staff, I mean, I know you're not a wide receiver coach, but what was it? Does it seem like it was mechanical concentration? Why did he have those struggles?
Well, yeah, it's a great question, and honestly, I don't know. The receivers coaches changed the 2 years I was there, and I didn't have – I mean, I was friendly with them, but never really asked that particular question, to be honest with you. My guess is that focus had something to do with it at some point. I know he put in a lot of reps with that jugs gun. I mean, he worked on it really, really hard to get better at it. But it never really seemed to improve in his final year. I was really thinking, hoping that he would come back for one more year. And, you know, in a Chip Kelly offense especially, I mean, my goodness, he could have been the leading receiver in the country and fixed up whatever he needed to fix up and proved to everybody that he can be a serious person off the field and you know, everything else. But like a lot of people, you know, they want that instant gratification and off they go.
Final question for me, Josh. Kenny Young, Matt Dickerson, two defensive players that some people will project as kind of a third-day developmental type players. What can you tell us about Kenny and Matt?
Kenny is phenomenal. He's gonna, and not quite Jayon Brown, who was a UCLA linebacker, went on to be with the Titans a year ago. That kind of motor, though, and that kind of want to, doesn't always wrap up perfectly, but you know, hopefully somebody can fool him on technique correctly, and that's kind of the last piece of the puzzle. I think he's a great kid, and Dickerson, a great kid. I just don't know if the athleticism is there to play at the NFL level. I hope so, because I know he really wants to. But if I had to take one of those two, I would absolutely take Kenny Young.
Before we let you go, I'm just curious from what you're hearing, Josh, just to pull it full circle in terms of Josh Rosen. You know, have you been hearing about a specific team that you think is very high on him that he ultimately could land? Clearly, there's a lot of quarterbacks in the mix that are probably going to go in the top five. But in terms of the chatter that you're hearing, has any team jumped out to you?
Yeah, you know, I have to admit this, guys. Ever since I abandoned the Chargers gig, I'm really not as plugged in as I used to be a year ago. And I've stayed blissfully kind of above the fray on all that. You know, if I'm Denver, I pray that he falls to me. If I'm the Jets, I'm thinking, boy, that would, you know, take some pizzazz and some sizzle away from the Giants, and we can really work with this guy, and he sure ain't Christian Hackenberg, and, you know, that's a wonderful fit. But, you know, and I know this is a Giants podcast, and I don't mean to sound like a Giants homer, because I don't work for the Giants at all. I like the Giants, but I don't work for them. I just think it's a can't-miss deal. You know, I mean, if that's the guy that they want, that's the guy that they pick, I think everybody's going to end up very happy with each other. If they take one of the other quarterbacks, there's three or four of them that have – it's not the same upside because everybody's got a different skill set, obviously. But you're in such a good position, you really can't screw this pick up, I don't think, because there's just a lot of talent coming out in the top five or ten.
Josh, we appreciate it. What's your pitching matchup tonight? What do you got?
That's a great – I'm going to just dive in and start working on that as soon as we hang up, matter of fact. We got your Aaron Nola and Matt Harvey. It's been a big deal when it was Matt Harvey. So hopefully he can get out in a good way, and Mets could use a win on a frosty night. So hopefully that all comes to pass.
Thanks, Josh. You have our condolences for having to work with Chris Majkowski
yes,
tonight.
Big-time condolences, yes.
tell him we said hello. No.
Yes, we send our regards, painfully.
Madge is the best, and I will make sure that I quote you verbatim, so no worries.
No one brings a sunnier disposition on a daily basis than that guy. Thanks, Josh.
Ray of sunshine on a day like this.
No doubt. Thanks,
Thank
Josh.
You, Josh.
Appreciate it.
That's Josh Lewin. Does a great job. UCLA football play-by-play, also play-by-play with Howie Rose for the Mets on 710 WOR. shouldn't have second-guessed myself. I was right when I had those call letters off the top. So, interesting on Rosen. I think more interesting to me, because he kind of said everything about Josh that we've heard from everyone else. I don't think there's a lot of news there. I thought his commentary on Colt Miller was interesting, in that he – and it kind of reaffirms what I've heard. As good as the combine was, and people think he has the physical tools, very inconsistent as a left tackle there protecting Josh Rosen.
Well, and one of the things that he pointed out when he was talking about Rosen, John, is he kept saying the offensive line left a lot to be desired. So when you say that overall, you have to include, I think, everybody within that group, and that doesn't necessarily speak volumes of the production of the individuals. But, you know, when I saw his numbers, we got the combine, 6'9", and I said the same thing that Josh said. I mean, how many offensive linemen in the NFL are 6'9", and have the ability to bend down? Remember, I'm not trying to make a comparison here, but one of the things we talked about with Larry Dinell, John, at the tight end position,
leverage.
What was one of his issues?
Yeah.
He could not get in a position on the line where he was comfortable so that he could win his blocking battles. So that, I think, is something that you have to take into consideration before you draft somebody like that.
No question. Look, and I think Josh Rosen, quite frankly, and I think what he said about the concussions was interesting. And that he wanted to go back into the game. But then, remember, 2 or 3 weeks passed, and then he didn't end up playing in the bowl game either, which was, you know, I think 3 or 4 weeks after the initial injury. But again, they're painting it as more of a precautionary thing. Which
preparing
is,
for the draft,
which
life
is understandable.
In the NFL.
I get that. But if you could erase that off-the-field concern, to me, he's right there with Sam Darnold at the top of this draft. With the quarterbacks. You know, everything he did on the field, he's wonderful, fantastic, very good player. I don't buy the teammates don't like him thing. I don't. Just because I haven't heard any of his teammates actually say it. I've heard people, you know, assume that they wouldn't like him. Again, you mentioned because he's maybe from a more well-off family and
can't
a lot of his teammates wouldn't be and he can't relate to them. But if you just look at his on-the-field performance, he's very worthy of a top 3 or 4 pick in this draft. And I think he's the quarterback that can step in the quickest, even quicker than Mayfield, and be an excellent quarterback in the NFL in year number one.
Even quicker than Darnold, too,
as a year one quarterback?
Yeah.
Yes. I think as a passer, he is a more polished player than Darnold, but Darnold, I believe, has a higher upside because he's more mobile and more athletic.
And has the size and so forth
that comes
with it. No, I think that's all fair. I think if you're considering drafting Josh Rosen, to me the interview is probably so important. And your interaction with him, not that it's not important for other prospects, John, but I think this is a guy you really want to get to know when you're in the room with him. Get to know his personality, what his interaction is like. So this way you can either put some of these narratives to rest or it confirms some of these narratives. But, you know, right now a lot of it is the court of public opinion from the outside looking at him and making judgment. When you're in the room like anybody else, you completely could have a completely different image.
And my impression of just watching Rosen, and we'll get to your calls after this comment, folks, at 201-939-4513. I see we got a full bank of calls. He presents himself well. If you watch him do his interviews at the Combine, very thoughtful, very intelligent, smart guy. He really seems like he will do well in these meetings. You know, someone mentioned his table manners the other day. I forget who it was when they got interviewed. They had dinner with him, and they said his table manners were fantastic. I forget who said it.
I mean, if that doesn't tell that you're going to be a great quarterback, I don't know what does.
Yeah, it just
that the fork and the knife are on the right side of the plate.
I always work outside.
Blew me away.
That's how it works. But look, I think he'll do well in those standing in those situations. And I'm with Josh. You know, if the Giants don't go quarterback or don't pick him at 2, and he falls to the Jets at 3. I think that would be an excellent, excellent pick along with Baker Mayfield as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly I've said this multiple times that I'm very high on Baker Mayfield, but
Steve Tisch, by the way, said he liked his table manners.
Okay.
Thank you, Dave Donovan.
So there we go.
Yes.
After they had the meeting with Rosen.
He said that at the owner's meeting.
And that was when he spoke to the media, which
correct.
I believe is also up on Giants.com if you want to go back and take a listen to that. But, you know, that's what I say becomes the overanalyzation. When the media runs with a quote like that and let's make a story out of the fact, well, considering we have commentary on his table mannerisms, that's an indication that he can handle self when he's in the pocket. But this is why some teams, I think, are very much caught up in, is there a lot of separation between these quarterback prospects because of what we're talking about with the pros and cons of Darnold, pros and cons of Rosen and Mayfield. And I always feel if this group is so close together and you're picking high like the Cleveland Browns, you got to think about whether or not there's a huge advantage with one versus the rest of the group.
Here's the thing, though, and this is the way I look at it, though, Lance. While maybe your overall grades might come in similarly, the styles of the guys are very different to me. Like, Mayfield and Rosen are just very different the way they play. Josh Allen is different than all the other three guys in how they play. Lamar Jackson's on an island all by himself, too. I think the two closest guys in terms of style is probably Darnold and Rosen. Darnold, I think, like I said, is probably more athletic than Rosen is. I think those are the two guys that are probably closest. But I think usually when it comes to the quarterback position, even though you might have guys graded similarly, we've had this conversation before, the style and the type of person will usually make one stand out among the others that you like the best.
And that's how it should be. I mean, especially if two guys are close. But I guess my point is, if you go back to the draft 2 years ago, if the Rams took Carson Wentz and the Eagles took Jared Goff, or would the Eagles have at least considered to take Jared Goff? My answer is probably yes.
I don't think the Eagles would have made that move to trade up if they knew they weren't getting Wentz.
Well,
my understanding
I'm sure
is that
was part of
Wentz
the influence
a lot more than Goff.
But I'm saying, let's say they were aggressive and they just wanted to position themselves to make sure that they got at least a quarterback. If Goff falls to them at two, do they pass up on Jared Goff, or was there that much of a separation between the two in their minds? That and once again, this is a hypothetical I'm throwing out. I mean, we don't necessarily know unless Howie Roseman's in the room.
Well, it's obviously similar to what the Jets did this year too. I mean, they're picking up the three. They don't know which guy is going to be there. They made the trade so early.
Although, if you listen to Todd Bowles, apparently six or seven guys are in the vicinity of what they're thinking. That's a whole other thing that I think we could spend an entire show on examining.
Not exactly captain quote.
No, not at all. Yes.
That Todd Bowles. But I think he's a better coach than other people think. Anyway, let's get to your calls at 201-939-4513. Orrin in Virginia held through that interview. We'll go to him first on line number three. Orrin, how are you, buddy?
How you guys doing today, man?
We're great, Orrin. What's up?
I'm Peter. I don't know if you guys heard the rumor about what Peter King said this week about how the Browns are planning to take Josh Allen. I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm hoping that is true.
I've seen multiple people put that out there as a possibility. I wouldn't rule it out. I personally would still be surprised if they didn't select Darnold, but that's just me.
Because I feel like if that does happen, the Giants have to take Sam Darnold. Even, like, just imagine him just sitting behind, learning from a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's already good, but just imagine how his level could just be, like, much better just sitting behind Eli Manning.
But, Orrin, I hear you. I think him sitting, period, for a year to learn the NFL way would be beneficial, but I don't think there's any magic wand sitting behind Eli. Like, and, you know, everyone makes a big deal about Davis Webb with that, too. I'm going to be consistent here. Just because you sit behind a really good quarterback for a year doesn't mean you automatically become as good as a really good quarterback. It doesn't work that way.
No, I agree with you, John. I don't think it translates, and I'm not trying to necessarily, you know, throw anybody under the bus, but Ryan Nassib sat behind Eli Manning, and granted, the opportunities weren't there for him, but that hasn't necessarily translated even elsewhere. So I don't think that guarantees anything.
If you're good enough, it'll help you. Orrin, if you're good enough, it'll help you. But if you're not good enough, it's not going to matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. But I understand you trying to compare him to Ryan Nassib and say, Davis Webb. They're a reason why they were drafted. So
low. Oh, no.
We're just making the point that sitting behind a polished quarterback, I mean, doesn't necessarily guarantee success. That's my bigger point. Darnold could have all the upside in the world, but that doesn't mean that he's guaranteed to have a successful NFL career, too.
And both Lance and I will say Darnold's a much better prospect than both those guys coming out of college.
Doubt.
No doubt about it.
I would want Josh Rosen, but he has too many injuries that scares me. You know what I'm saying? You can't go, you know, once Eli Manning retires, go from a quarterback that never gets injured, and then you start getting a quarterback that's always getting hurt and stuff. And that's why I feel like Sam Darnold, like, I feel like he could be the next thing. Or that, either that or we trade down and hopefully get, like, a right tackle or something if we have to. Because I really don't feel – even though Eric Flowers is supposed to be – competing for right tackle, I feel like we should draft a first-round right tackle.
Well, assuming the value matches that, Orrin, though, you don't take a right tackle for the sake of taking a right tackle. I mean, that to me would be an extremely bad move.
And honestly, the only right tackle I think, Orrin, that makes sense in the first round to me is McGlinchey, if you're picking the top 20, and maybe you can roll the dice on a Connor Williams if you're between 20 and 30.
What about UCLA? Is that, which one is the one from the UCLA?
Well,
Colton Miller. I would not take Colton Miller in the. And by the way, I think Colton Miller will go in the first round of this draft. I would personally would not select Colton Miller in the first round of this draft. He's a developmental guy.
I mean, Miller started at right tackle. He moved to left tackle last season, so he has experience at both positions.
Yeah. But can you guys agree with me, honestly, as a GM, though, that is either we should select the quarterback or we trade down? I feel like there's too many good running backs in this draft to be spending all on a first-round pick, and running backs don't even last that long.
Or personally, if it was my decision, I would be on the same boat as you. I agree. I think you either pick the quarterback at two or you trade down, and I would like to trade down to five with Denver if they're interested in moving up. I don't know if that's the case or not. That would be my target, but we'll see what the Giants decide to do. Lance, what do you think?
I don't agree with that philosophy. I think if Bradley Chubb or Quentin Nelson is somebody that Dave Gettleman has a great deal of belief that he could pan out, then I think there's warranty that that number two pick deserves to be selected. Well, what I'm saying is I still think if you love the guy, remember, you don't know what's going to happen after you, regardless of all the projections. And we could sit here and say the Jets are definitely taking the quarterback.
Yeah, they are.
And I still believe that we could have any wild card humanly possible. I'm not 100% sold.
Time out.
I am not 100% sold.
Oren, thanks for the call.
I am not 100% sold that anybody is locked into any position.
You know the Browns are taking at least one quarterback.
Yeah, no, that I can understand.
And you know if a team's trading up with the Giants, that team's picking a quarterback.
In all likelihood, if Buffalo made that move.
You really think the Jets move from 6-3 not to pick a quarterback? Come on,
I would not. I just wouldn't rule out anything. Listen, it may be a stretch, and I'm not saying that it would stun me if they take a quarterback, but I just would not rule anything out that they may have moved up to perhaps get somebody that they are high on outside of the quarterback position.
But they don't know that guy's even going to be there.
No, they don't. Well, but just like they don't know the quarterback.
Well, they know be there too. They know at least one of three quarterbacks.
But maybe they really like one guy though.
Well, then they're stupid for trading up to three.
Of course, you could easily criticize them there. But until they make the pick, I mean, anything right now is in play. That's my point. Anything is in play at number three. There are no guarantees when it comes to the NFL draft.
No, there are no guarantees. There are no guarantees. But there are certainly probabilities.
There is probability, but I don't – everybody who says that, well, you shouldn't take the guy at number two because he's definitely going to be there if you move down to number five or number six, then all of a sudden some wild cards come out. And also, what if another team moves up in front of you that takes a guy that you were anticipating? You just don't know how that's going to pan out. That's larger point.
But if teams move up, they're – more than likely moving up to select a quarterback. They're not moving up to select another position player.
I mean, listen, is it possible a team has a love affair with Saquon Barkley and wants to move up for him? I don't think that's crazy.
It's not crazy.
It may not be good value. I mean, I think you're coming from it's not good value. It's not good smarts, and I don't necessarily disagree with that.
You think a team might do something stupid?
Well, no, but I mean, listen, if a team feels that Saquon Barkley is a once in a 5 or 6 year radius of being a productive running back, listen, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, listen, Trent Richardson was traded for. So, you know, anything could very well happen with respect to the NFL draft. That's all I'm saying. I wouldn't rule anything out. And that's why I feel if you are content with a player, you have conviction on a player, I don't think you can hesitate in taking them regardless of what position they play. Because that means that clearly you have the player highly rated.
Of course.
I mean, that's what it gets back to. If your scouting department did its homework and they say, hey, Bradley Chubb is our guy, we believe he's by far the best value at number two, then I say you go with him.
But I will go back and I'll to what Dave Gettleman said at the owners' meeting, and he said it's all about maximizing value.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're trying to maximize value. So if you can get the same player – and again, this is only if you're trading down to five. You go down to 12, all bets are off.
No, obviously. Because I don't think you're in the ballpark of getting any of those guys.
All bets are off.
Yeah.
So I'm just talking specifically about the possibility of going down to five. If you can get – one of your top two players and add another first round pick and another second round pick, that's maximizing your value. It's not just picking the one guy that you might like the most. You know what I mean?
Well, but the only team right now, because if you do the Buffalo deal, that's Buffalo's not providing you that.
It's unless Denver at five. That's it.
Unless Buffalo moves up before then moving up again.
Right.
And then maybe has an opportunity to offer you something better.
And people, I believe the people believe it would be, they would go to six with the Colts and then go from six
and
to
then,
two.
Correct. So then maybe you're still in the ballpark of getting one of your top tier players. But anything short of that, you're running the risk that now you're taking yourself out of the mix for a top tier player. And
absolutely.
I just don't think that's worth it.
Tony in Washington, D.C. on line one. He joins us next. Hi, Tone.
Hey, gents. So I think Josh Rosen is the best quarterback in the draft, and I don't even want to talk about him right now.
Okay. I think that's fair.
I got to talk about the GM, Dave Gettleman.
Sure.
Guys, he showed his hand last week. I know you don't want to make guarantees, but the way – and I know this is old news now, but I didn't know this until recently. The way he gushed over Saquon Barkley and then admitted at the end of the interview that he's never met him, I was like, okay.
But Tony, here's the thing. You can love a player on tape. Doesn't mean you have to meet him in person.
Here's the thing. I get that. But then I started looking at, well, okay, you haven't met him yet. Well, who have we met? Where has the owner gone? Where has the head coach gone?
Tony, just a heads up, Dave Gettleman wasn't at any pro day. So the only time Dave Gettleman has met any of these players was at the Combine. So he's in the same boat with all these players. You know what I mean?
Guys, that's not what I said. I said, where has Pat Shurmur? Where has Tisch? Where has the scouting department? Because we can assume what they're going to do, because you're right, those are assumptions. We know where the owner and the coach and the scouts are going. We don't have to assume that. We have not seen – I have seen the attention on four players via the media, albeit – Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Bradley Chubb. I haven't seen anywhere near the level of attention on Quentin Nelson, on Saquon Barkley, on Minkah Fitzpatrick.
There could be visits coming down the road, Tony.
The reason you know about the four quarterbacks is because their pro days were televised on NFL Network.
Yeah.
And they're made a big deal of. How do you know what giant contingents were at Penn State's pro day or at Alabama's pro day? I mean, you're telling
well,
me
we
you don't
do
think
know. We huh? do know. The media was there.
Yeah, but Tony, I still think you're psychoanalyzing everything way too far.
Giants did have contingents at those teams' pro days.
Yes, and they invited two players from that pro day to the cornerback and the wide receiver. That was news from the pro day that they invited those two guys. Now, we do know Saquon didn't participate in the athletic portion.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he was available. You're taking these quarterbacks to dinner, you're sending extra scouts to scout Bradley Chubb, and then you give a gushing review of Saquon Barkley that you haven't scouted, given any additional resources to? And he said it. He said, shame on me. I haven't dedicated any additional resources to Saquon Barkley.
First of all,
I'm not assuming it.
I think you're reading way too much into what is being said to the media.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, when you have the second overall pick and you know that it's extremely valuable, you don't think there's some mind games going on here to throw out things so that you make teams think you're going in one direction? You know, that's a big part of the draft process. And I think you're completely dismissing that and reading way too much into everything.
And Tony, what happens, Tony, hold on. Just what happens if Saquon Barkley ends up being one of the 30 players that does a full day visit here at the facility?
Well, which is what I said. Visits could be coming up.
He has to be there. If you Google Saquon Barkley pre-draft visit, it only says Giants because of the gushing review David Gettleman gave.
So
we know that's happening.
So what's your overall point, Tony?
I'll make something unclear. I'm not talking about the words. I'm talking about where is the head coach and the owners going? Dave Gettleman's gushing interview was nonsense. I can't believe you can gush over a guy like that at that extent and then end the interview while I've never met him and no one here has gone to scout him outside of the combine.
Dave Gettleman hasn't met anybody outside of the combine, Tony. Dave Gettleman hasn't met the quarterbacks.
No,
he hasn't met anybody.
Dave Gettleman.
But you just said that's what he said. No, Tony, you're quoting Dave Gettleman, and then you're saying you're not talking about Dave Gettleman. You can't quote him and then say you're not talking about him.
No, I'm talking about in terms of visiting because I agree. Dave Gettleman hasn't gone to any pro days.
Zero.
Exactly. So what difference does it make what Dave Gettleman's saying about these prospects?
And by the way, the owner wasn't at the pro day. The owner happens to live in California. So since the pro day was in California, John Mara wasn't out there. Steve Tisch lives in California. He was out there, so he went to dinner.
Yeah, So no other head coaches have gone to these pro days to watch quarterbacks throw. Is that what you're saying?
Of course. Saquon Barkley is from the Bronx and is playing in Pennsylvania.
The point is, Tony, though, who's to say that Saquon Barkley is not going to visit the Giants facility between now and the draft? When Dave Gettleman said, when he spoke to the media, he said, we're going to be setting up some private individual visits in the coming weeks. So Barkley could very well have that interaction that you're talking about that we have yet to see yet.
It's possible, but guys, to gush over a guy like that,
and to not have gone that it's just his words, that interview does not match the scouting. And he himself said that. He said his words in that interview does not match the scouting of Saquon Barkley. How do you gush? I have, tell me this, gentlemen. Have you ever seen a GM gush over a prospect like that publicly?
Yes, yeah. Probably if I went through the history of the NFL draft, I guarantee
Thank you, Tony.
I will find the quote from a general manager, a head coach gushing over a player, and then they probably don't even wind up taking that player, or they do take that player.
You watch him on film, and you like what you see. I don't understand why this is such a story. Just because you didn't shake his hand, you share a piece of bread with him, you can't gush over the guy? I don't understand.
This is why the draft needs to be tomorrow. It's for stuff like this, where we actually are sitting through quotes from executives and being, oh, there we go. Just gave away the keys to the kingdom. That player is going to that team.
Well,
I
think his point is that the the overall point was that he wouldn't get to it, that Barkley's a smokescreen?
I think that was part of it. And that's why I said, though, that I think is a relevant part of the conversation, that perhaps they are selling certain prospects, because if you know the number two pick is valuable, John, you want to make teams think, hey, you're very high on that player, you very likely may take that player, and if they want that player, they now have to give up a little bit more. So that's another reason why I'm not reading so much into everything that is said from the Giants front office about prospects. I think this is all part of the draft process, and the Giants are not the first team to experience having the number two overall pick, where maybe they want to give an indication to other teams of where they're going, and that's not necessarily the direction of where they ultimately wind up. I think it's pointless to read into quotes and statements and owners' meetings and coaching meetings. I just don't think there's a lot of substance behind it.
Yeah, and I don't know what Giant personnel were at Penn State's Pro Day. I guarantee you the organization was very well represented there.
Yeah, as were a lot of other teams which were well represented. So my point is, why are we singling out the Giants and saying that they're giving away everything, but no other teams are giving away any indication of where they may go? Here's another example, John. Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Cleveland Browns, there was a photo taken at Sam Darnold's pro day. He was sitting in the stands with his pro day. So what did the media do? The media takes the photo and then starts quoting it. Oh, well, here we go. You know, an owner's never met with the parents of a prospect that could go in the top five. That means Cleveland's absolutely taking Sam Darnold. This is what I mean in terms of the overanalyzation of movements and quotations. You got to take everything in stride, and you've got to put things in perspective. Everything is not, you know, detective work where, oh, here's an indication this is automatically going to happen. I mean, it's a little too much, I think, every single day, where people are just chomping at the bit for the draft to come, and they're looking for clues, and it may not mean anything in the big picture.
I have no idea, but Shermer could have been at Barkley's pro day. I don't know if he was or not. He could have been.
I don't know off the top of my head who exactly was there for what pro day, but once again, I just don't think it's that unique that Pat Shermer goes. Plus, what is Pat Shermer? Pat Shermer's an offensive coordinator who's worked with quarterbacks.
He's a quarterbacks guy.
I just don't think it's that unusual for him to be at a meeting or at a pro day.
It's important to get to know the quarterback more than the running back.
Who's going
to
be the face of the franchise and all that.
Face of the franchise, run your offense, the whole nine yards. I mean, that's a more in-depth analysis, more, you know, I don't want to use the word important, but I think there's more into it in evaluating the quarterback than it is the running back position.
Yeah, and he's also going to be running your offense, the offense that you plan on implementing and that you built. So I think you want a little bit more interaction. Not to dismiss the running back position, but I think it's a little bit easier to get to know the running back once he's in the building and so forth.
Not to mention the fact there are zero questions about Barkley off the field. Apparently, he's just, and from what I've heard and seen him in public, who knows what that means, but he seems like a tremendous kid, and by all means, he's just a great, great guy, and he'd be an asset to whatever locker room he goes into. So,
I'm with you.
Yeah, he saw him on tape. He liked what he saw. And by the way, here's the other thing. I know people make a big deal about this. You know, Dave Gettleman wasn't asked directly about Quentin Nelson. How do you know if he was asked about Quentin Nelson, he wouldn't give the same glowing review about Nelson?
The question was about Saquon Barkley, and then he gave a glowing review.
It's not like they went through 15 draft prospects, and Dave Gettleman gave a thumbnail on each one of the guys. They asked about one particular player, and he gave a glowing answer. Guess what? I guarantee you, if they asked about Quentin Nelson, he would have given a glowing review about Quentin Nelson, too.
Yes.
But they didn't ask that question.
Well, he's going to have his pre-draft press conference, so I think we need to tell the media, they need to run through, like, the top 10 prospects in the draft, and then once we get glowing reviews out of everybody, then there won't be anything to analyze.
Well, maybe they can ask him, and he can just project on the thing behind them what their top 30 is, and then he doesn't
that's
have
true.
To worry about
Why
it.
Why doesn't he just unveil the draft board for everybody, essentially? I think that's what we should do.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
And then we don't have to talk about it. We don't have to speculate. That's it. Make everybody's life simple.
All jokes aside, I will say this. I believe his pre-draft press conference will yield much more intelligence and information than what we have heard in past.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Pre-draft press conferences.
That's fair.
I believe he will mention the name of a prospect. We haven't had a name of a prospect mentioned at a
being
pre-draft press conference, I think, in a decade.
Be a little refreshing, I guess, is what you're saying.
The Michael Eisen article is always the same. Jerry Reese holds cards close to vest.
Maybe a little bit more.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Revealed.
Let's go to Tyler in North Carolina on line four. He's up next. Hi, Tyler. What's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
Good. Kind of sticking with the theme of quarterbacks here lately, I wanted to bring up something I'm sure a lot of Giants fans are familiar with, and that's Bill Parcells' rules for drafting a quarterback.
Uh-huh.
Now, obviously, these don't really apply to everything related to a quarterback. It doesn't take, for instance, what you can see on film or off-the-field issues or anything like that. But the seven I'm looking at are three-year starter, senior in college, graduated, started 30 games, won 23 of those games, posted a 2-to-1 touchdown-to-interception ratio, and completed 60% of his passes. And looking through kind of the top 10 quarterbacks through that criteria, only two of them actually pass all seven, and that's Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State and Baker Mayfield from Oklahoma. And I just wanted to get your guys' opinions on that. Obviously, it doesn't take everything into account, but it might serve as a good baseline. So I'll take your answers off the air, and I appreciate you guys letting me get on here today.
Hey Tyler, real quick before you go, which one did Rosen fail on that criteria?
Rosen failed four of them, actually.
Which ones? Just out of curiosity.
He was not a three-year starter. He started part of his third year.
Okay, but he did start years. Okay.
Was not a senior, did not graduate, and only won 17 games.
Okay, so it was the games won. All right, thanks, Tyler. I appreciate the call. I would throw out the other ones because, look, if you're a really good quarterback, you're not playing to a senior year now. It's just not going to happen very often. I know Baker Mayfield did. But I also guarantee you, and I know this isn't in Parcells' list, but I guarantee you his prototypical vision of a quarterback doesn't look like Baker Mayfield either. If you want to look at the rules for a quarterback position, I guarantee you Bill's rule for a quarterback isn't to be 6'1", okay? I'm sure it's not. As much as that might annoy Lance Meadow.
I'm sure
it's not on Parcells' list.
It's a very valid
list.
Statement. I don't think that's a stretch.
Yeah, and I get it, but I think the game has changed so much now. I know. Thank God Paul Dottino's out here. He'll lose his mind. I think those rules might be obsolete these days.
Yeah, well, there's way too much quarterback talk on this show for Paul Dottino as well. Yes. You didn't even have to worry about the size.
If you notice, by the way, I did book most of our quarterback heavy guests on shows Paul was on, by the way.
No coincidence there.
I did have him on New Wyoming because I know he's a big Josh Allen guy. But the other guys,
yes,
you'll notice.
Make sure. Yeah.
There will be no Dottino.
No, he was smiling very widely during the Wyoming interview, if you notice. Go back and watch the videotape. I think that confirms my belief. Actually, the one criteria that the last caller threw out that I don't put a lot of stock in, and I think this is relevant to when I talk about NFL quarterbacks, I'm not really worried about 17 wins versus 23 wins. There's a lot of other factors that play a role in terms of teams winning and losing football games. So forgive me for not really caring much about how many games in totality. I care more about the individual, the touchdown to interception ratio, you know, starting experience. Those things I'll put a lot more stock in than whether or not they met that borderline of 23 victories.
Everything's in context.
Yeah.
And it's great to have these rules that you match the guy up against, and I get it. It makes it easier for people that don't have the time to look at tape and things like that. But for the people that do, everything happens in context. Just like Josh Lewin talked about Rosen's interceptions and stuff like that. You know, everything happens in context. Every interception has a different story. Every game has a different story. You might go back and you say, oh, wow, you know, he went, you know, 5-6 this year. Well, what happens if in five of those six losses the kid threw for 300 yards and had four touchdowns and no picks, but the defense gave up 60 points? Yeah. You know, that's not the quarterback's fault.
that's more of a reason why you need context for a stat like that. It can't just be on an island by itself. To answer the caller's question, or statement, I should say, about, you know, Baker Mayfield and Mason Rudolph and what we think of him, you know, Baker Mayfield, stats aside, stature aside, when Dave Gettleman threw out the quotation, John, "I want guys that hate to lose," I think Baker Mayfield fits under that umbrella. I like his attitude. I know it turns off to a lot of people. I like it. I like the fact that the guy shows emotion on the sideline. I like the fact that he seems irritated when things go wrong. That's what I want in a quarterback. So that, to me, is a big plus and another reason why I'm high on him. As far as Mason Rudolph, I feel as if he's the underrated quarterback in this group. He's almost like the stepbrother that you forget about, or the stepchild. And I think part of it, John, is because he did not take part in the combine because he was hurt. So it's
or
almost
the Senior
like,
Bowl.
Yeah, so it's almost like he got lost in translation as a result of that. But I think Mason Rudolph could wind up being a steal for a team if they're patient and they're not aggressively pursuing a quarterback and they have the time to groom somebody.
I think Rudolph, let me put it this way. I think Mason Rudolph has a higher floor just because he has so much experience, and you mentioned his production, things like that. He does not have the elite arm talent that I think the other quarterbacks in the class out. I even think Mayfield's on a different level than him in terms of arm strength.
Yeah.
He comes from the, you know, your spread system, which isn't an NFL-style system.
And
so
that's
why
people think his production went up.
Sure.
Too. Yeah.
And I think all that's fair. I would compare Mason Rudolph to an Andy Dalton type guy. But you know what? If you can, in the second round, draft a guy that can bring it to the playoffs for 4 or 5 straight years, that's not a bad deal, right?
I don't think that's a bad comparison at all. I know a lot of people are going to be like, well, I don't want you to just get me there. I want you to take me further. But once again, it takes an entire team to take you further, just to take your quarterback. If you draft Mason Rudolph, you get Andy Dalton, and you get similar results to Andy Dalton, I would say if I'm an executive, I would live with that if I could develop a guy like
that. Depending on when you pick him up.
Of course, meaning you're not going to reach for him. But you know what? If he falls to you in the second round, to your point, John, if he's Andy Dalton, I can live with that. I think that's good value.
Daniel in Brooklyn, he's up next. Hey, Daniel, what's going on? You're our final caller.
Hey, guys.
How we doing, Daniel?
Yeah. I'm all right. Yeah, I was thinking, we shouldn't trade with Buffalo. We'll be way too far out trading with Buffalo. I'm only thinking about Denver.
Daniel, that's why if Buffalo comes to me with a trade, and I would still hesitate to do it, by the way, but my conversation would start with your 2 ones this year, and I need your 1 next year, and then what else are you going
to
get?
Yeah, that has to be the
That's the point. Only way I go back down to 12, because I'm with you, and Lance said it earlier, you get to 12, you're not getting one of the top 4 or 5 position players in this draft, and that to me is a problem.
To me, that's a problem as well. Like, I wanted a top-tier player.
Yeah.
Because if we stay at 2, it's hard. If Darnold's there too, I think we have to take Darnold. But I would like to go to 5 and take Nelson, Barkley, or Chubb, whichever one they choose.
I'm fine with that, Daniel. I think that's a good plan.
All good options. I don't disagree with you there. I mean, Denver, if you're going to move down to 5, I mean, the question for Denver is, does Denver feel as if a quarterback can fall to it where it sits right now?
Well, would they
do
be,
the Broncos feel as if they just stayed as is, could they get their quarterback?
Yeah, could they get their quarterback?
Yeah, could they get
they
their quarterback?
They could get a quarterback, but will they get their quarterback?
Well, yeah,
and
but
I think that's the question.
Well, here's my question. If Denver's high on Baker Mayfield, do you think feasibly that Baker Mayfield could drop to them to 5?
I think John Elway will be biting his nails on draft night.
Well, he probably will.
That he does.
But he probably will, John. Certainly, you're going to be stressed out.
Sure.
But I think that's feasible. I don't think it's a stretch.
No,
it's
not.
If Baker Mayfield is their guy, that he could drop to them at 5.
I think there's a chance that any of the 3, I think Darnold getting down that far would be a surprise.
I would agree
with
you.
But I think Allen, Mayfield, or Rosen getting to Denver is not out of the question.
Yeah,
but only one of those 3, and that's the trick.
But the thing is, if they could live with one of those 3, then maybe Elway says, you know what, I got Case Keenum, I still have Paxton Lynch. I just don't think it's worth sacrificing everything I have to move up to get one of these 3.
That's a good question.
Guy, I had a quick question for you guys.
Sure.
If we can't get a deal done with Denver, and we not doing the deal with Buffalo, and we stay in it too. I know the Giants got to have one quarterback that they like more than the other. And if Cleveland takes that guy, do you guys mind taking Nelson Barkley or Chubb, the number 2?
Look, Daniel, if you get to the point and you can't trade down and there's no quarterback on the board that you love and you believe is your next franchise guy, those are the 3 guys you choose from. As much as I love Quentin Nelson, I'm still having trouble selling myself on drafting a guard at 2nd overall. I think it's a tough sell. For me, a running back at that spot's a tough sell too, but I believe that Barkley is a better player than Chubb is. So that's kind of where I am right now. I think those are the three you choose from, and I think that's what you have to do if you can't do anything else. And I think that's going to be the formula, and thanks a lot for the call, that the Giants will be trying to figure out over the next couple of weeks. And I think that's the trick for me. If the quarterback you don't love is there at two, or the quarterback you love is not there at two, and you can't trade down, then which guy do you pick? That's when it gets fun.
Good problem to have.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you have some options. But, yeah, it's going to be tough because you want to assign value and you want to combine that with productivity or what you think productivity will be down the road.
If you drafted today, and I'm reserving the right to change my mind, and Lance does as well, if you're not picking the quarterback, you're there at two. Who's
and the three guys are there. Barkley, Chubb, and Nelson
who's
are there.
Your pick?
Barkley would be my first choice. That would be the direction I would go to, number one. Nelson would be number two on my list. Chubb would be three on my list, as it stands right now. That's how I would rank them.
I think my order right now, and everyone knows I've made the case for not drafting a running back, but I think my order right now would probably be Barkley, Chubb, and Nelson. But Nelson, though, that has changed multiple times over the past week.
Really? I thought you were high on him pretty early or a few weeks ago.
Oh, Nelson?
Yeah.
I love Nelson.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's why this order has changed many times.
Now it seems as if, you know, he's a little bit down.
Like I said, the order's changed.
Of course. Well, it's
allowed.
Hard. I don't think there's anything wrong.
Because all three guys are really good.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I watched Chubb probably four games last week on Friday, and I haven't done a show since then. He doesn't wow you with his athleticism. You know, you watch like Von Miller and Cleo Mack, and you're like, wow. Even Melvin Ingram, you're like, wow. He's more of your two-way player that can do run and pass, technician, where he's very good hands. You know, he had if you watch drills at practice, Lance, you've seen this. You know the defensive line drill where you swipe your hands and you kind of go underneath? Mm-hmm. He literally got a sack doing exactly that. And that's one of the fundamental pass rush, you know, techniques that people use.
Technician,
I think he's a good technician, but he's not that blazing edge guy. And without that blazing athleticism at the edge, do you want to use a second overall pick on a guy like that? I worry about it. But then I'm down to, you know, running back with the shorter career. But, boy, Saquon Barkley's awesome, and he would really help the team. And I think, you know, even if you use him in a, you know, not full-time role, just the impact he has in the game is ridiculous. But then Nelson's a sure thing. I mean, look, as much as anything's a sure thing, Nelson's as close to one as you can get. I'm positive he's going to be a Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber player. That's a nice thing to have, especially when you're trying to build your offensive line.
So, of course, and a guy that would warrant a second contract, that's number one. And then number two, I mean, you know, listen, if you can get Zach Martin or Brandon Scherff out of Quentin Nelson, and granted, their careers still have yet to end, so, I mean, we may be jumping ahead, but I think that's good value, because if that's a guy that can help anchor your offensive line moving forward and a guy that you can lock up and you feel comfortable, you know, I think it's something to certainly take into consideration. But it's all about how much the Giants front office views these individual players and how much upside they think these individual players have.
And
that's
the
big
funny,
thing.
And the way I'm selling myself on Barkley is one of the big things I worry about is longevity for a running back.
I think you got to do that for any running back, yeah.
But I think if you use Barkley the right way, almost as much as a receiver as you use him as a running back, and maybe only give it to him 15 to 17 times per game on the ground, and you use him almost like the Rams used to use Marshall Faulk, I think you might get more years out of him because you get pounded on less from, you know, trying to stuff between the tackles a million times a game. So I know fans will get annoyed that, well, he's not your full-time 27 carry a game back. But I think you get more on the back end. You still use him in the passing game, which now the running back or receiver is just as important as a running back as a runner these days in the NFL. So he can almost be like a super-duper version of Alvin Kamara. Maybe not as good as a receiver as he is, but a much better runner. I think that might be the window here where I'm settling in terms of how you use Barkley.
And you have other running backs on the roster that can get 10, 12 carries combined. So I don't think it's saying much to say we don't want to give Saquon Barkley 25 carries. And let's face it, how many running backs in today's NFL are getting 25 carries a game?
Oh, yeah. Well,
even guys who were drafted
Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott. That's kind of it.
It's very rare.
That's kind of it.
But here's the other part of the equation. See, if I draft Saquon Barkley, I want him to play special teams. I don't want to completely remove him.
I think
from
you only use him on kick returns occasionally.
That's fine.
Occasionally, when you need a big play.
But I'm not going to say that because he's solely a running back for my future, right, that I will not entertain that idea. Just like, remember, and we've had conversations. I don't want to go backwards, but I am one that says if you want to play Odell Beckham on special teams, you play him.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, the Steelers don't hold back Antonio Brown because they're worried about, God forbid, an injury happening.
Hey, I've always said if you're in a game in the second half and it's close and you need a big return to spark you, put him back.
Yeah, and that's my philosophy.
And they have, by the way. They have used him.
Yeah, they have. No, I'm not saying that it hasn't been done, right, but I don't like the fan philosophy a lot that we get in terms of reaction to this conversation.
Yeah.
That's it. Keep him on the sideline. Don't look at him. You look at him the wrong way, he's going to get hurt. No, I'm not like that.
It's quesadilla day. Let's get some lunch. Nice. Dave Dominic's pumped. So are we. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Tomorrow on Giants.com, we have a special time for Big Blue Kickoff tomorrow, and I think this is news to our producer as well. We're going to go live at 1 because we're going to have availability before then that me and Paul Dottino have to attend. So Paul and I will be with you at 1 o'clock tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and we'll do some more college prospect talk. I don't have the school in front of me right now, but we will have another school tomorrow coming up on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance, good stuff.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure.
Everybody, we'll see you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Everybody have a fantastic day.
Have a good one.